This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to school to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
What tomorrow may bring for Walmart shoppers, what they're worried about over in Europe, and if you stick around to the very end today, something you are just not going to believe. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Let Marketplace be your guide to the modern world. Subscribe to the Marketplace Tech Report podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. Happy Thanksgiving, all. This is the Marketplace podcast for the 22nd of November, 2012. Good as always to have you with us. And without intending to rush you through your turkey day, I am obliged to mention that there are a whole lot of people at dining room tables all over this country already writing up battle plans and shopping lists for tomorrow, the busiest shopping day of the year. If going to the country's biggest retailer happens to be in those plans, brace yourself for more than just Black Friday specials, because some Walmart workers are planning demonstrations and walkouts at hundreds of stores. Marketplace's Chrissy Clark reports from the Wealth and Poverty Desk.
Today, after Greg Fletcher gobbles up a quick turkey lunch with his family...
Unfortunately, I'll be working.
Fletcher's an associate in the electronics department at a Walmart near Los Angeles, and he's got a shift that starts today at 5 p.m. He's also scheduled to work tomorrow, but he won't be clocking in. Instead, he'll be standing outside the store on a picket line.
My wife and myself will all be there along with many others.
Fletcher and his wife both work at Walmart and have for several years. He says they're frustrated with Walmart's low wages and lack of opportunities for full-time work. Though they'd like more shifts, they average about 32 hours a week each and together bring home just $24,000 a year, barely above the poverty line. They and their two young sons make ends meet with food banks and government-supplied health care.
It's impossible, in fact, for a family of four to be completely self-supportive with income that low. And it's just not right.
David Tovar is a spokesman for Walmart, which reported $16 billion in profit last year.
We believe we have very competitive wages that attract and retain millions of associates every day.
But having competitive wages in a low-wage industry like retail isn't saying much, according to Catherine Rutchlin, a policy analyst with the think tank Demos.
More than a quarter of workers in large firms in the retail industry are people who hold jobs and yet live in or near the poverty threshold.
Rutchlin released a study this week that found if large retailers raised the minimum hourly pay to $25,000 a year for a full-time job, their workers' increased purchasing power would have a multiplier effect that stimulated the whole economy. And Walmart would be a huge part of that effect. As the nation's largest employer with more than a million workers, it now helps set pay for the entire retail industry. I'm Chrissy Clark for Marketplace.
We complain, we lament, but a lot of us shop on Black Friday. How many of us? Well, that's a question for the experts.
And the latest poll numbers suggest margin of error.
There is somewhat of a disconnect.
It's conventional wisdom.
Our survey said...
Frank Newport is the editor-in-chief at Gallup. He is here once again for our segment called Attitude Check. Hey, Frank, it's good to talk to you again.
Good to talk to you.
What do we know, other than anecdotally, about how people in this country feel about the whole Black Friday, Thanksgiving shopping thing? Because honestly, it's a little crazy out there.
Well, we've tried to put numbers to it, and some other people have as well. First of all, how many people are going to be showing up? And when we just said, on Black Friday itself, are you personally going to shop? 18% said yes, which is low.
And that's Ipsos nothing.
That's absolutely right. And Ipsos Public Affairs poll expanded it and explicitly included online shopping, yeah. And they just got it up to like 30% or a little higher. So despite all the media frenzy, advertising frenzy, no matter how you look at the polls, on Friday, significantly less than half of us will be out there braving the crowds.
I think that's actually huge news right there, that we're all going absolutely bonkers for 18% of the American public.
That's right. That's right. In terms of physically shopping out there. But I guess the retailers are not dumb, and they know that this segment of society, whoever they are going to spend a lot of money, and that's why they're doing all this effort to get them out there. That Ipsos survey, by the way, Kai, showed that a big percent of those who said they were going to be out there would be out there starting at midnight. In fact, over half said to be there by 6 a.m. So these people are dedicated, the ones that are going to show up.
Now, I have to admit, I mean, I show great disdain for that, but I actually did once get up at 3 o'clock in the morning on that Friday to go stand in line for something. What was it? I think it was like some Xbox or something. I don't know.
A big screen TV?
Yeah, well, I didn't get it is the point. When you ask people why they shop, it must be price, right?
Yeah, we gave them five reasons and said, all right, how important is each of these? And overwhelmingly, it was the sales are good and the prices are cheap. How's that? 95% of Black Friday shoppers said that was an important reason, and everything else went down below that. We said it's a family tradition, there's a better selection of merchandise and so forth, but none of those got the basic high importance rating as the simple fact that people think things are cheaper when they go out at 3 a.m. on Black Friday morning.
People said it was a family tradition?
No, we gave that as a specific reason, okay. and relatively few Americans said, yeah, that's why we're going out. So it's not a family tradition like eating turkey. It's every person for themselves apparently fighting for those bargains.
Now, have you ever done any Black Friday shopping?
I have never gotten up at midnight, 3, 4, 5, 6 in the morning. I have gone out to buy a quart of milk. How's that during the day? But no, I avoid it like the plague, to be perfectly honest with you. It may be fascinating. I'm a sociologist. It's fascinating to get out there, I think, and just watch these frenzied crowds. But my social scientific needs to observe don't overwhelm my needs to stay away from the crowds.
There you go. Frank Newport, he's the editor-in-chief at Gallup and a smart, smart man. Frank, thanks a lot.
My pleasure.
On Wall Street today, not a creature was stirring. Oh, no, wait. Wrong holiday. It's easy, what with the food and the family and the football and all, to forget about the rest of the world today. But there is much going on across the pond this week, which has us asking,
what's up?
What's up?
What's up, Europe?
First, a report on the dangers of what Europeans are calling Brexit, fears that Britain may pull out of the European Union. British exit. Get it? It took me a minute. Those fears are only being raised by a summit on the EU budget, which started today in Brussels. From the European desk in London, Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports.
British Prime Minister David Cameron headed off to the summit with a spring in his step. He's demanding that the EU budget be frozen in these tough times. He thinks he's riding a wave of popular support.
I feel I've got the people of Europe on my side in arguing that we should stop endlessly picking their pockets and spending more and more money through the EU budget.
The budget pays for Europe's farm subsidies and to provide help for poorer member states. Britain pays in more than it takes out, and that makes it unpopular with the Brits. Cameron has threatened to veto the budget, leaving him isolated in Brussels again. German analyst Almut Möller says there's a growing sense in Germany that Brexit is nigh.
People think that the UK might be close to leaving the European Union. It is out there. And it is not something that goes down with a shock.
After all, Cameron has toyed with the idea of a referendum on Britain's continuing EU membership. Opinion polls suggest a majority of Brits would vote to leave. Big business here is getting worried.
Europe, however challenged, remains home for half our exports.
Roger Carr, head of Britain's main employers organisation, speaking at his annual conference this week, he made the case for staying in.
The cold business logic of a European partnership, out of self-interest, must prevail.
And it may well be in America's self-interest, too, that the US's closest European ally and main European business base stays inside the European Union. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Stephen is, of course, a Brit, which means he's not worried about working on our Thanksgiving. What about American expats, though, far from home, pining for turkey and pumpkin pie? What about them? Matt Smith works for a travel company in Edinburgh, Scotland. Caitlin Carroll used to work here, as in right here at Marketplace. She's a freelancer in Frankfurt, Germany now. Hey, guys.
Hi, Kai.
Hey, Kai. How's it going?
Good, good. So, Matt, this is your first Thanksgiving overseas as an expat, yes?
Indeed it is.
So what's it like? Are you doing the turkey thing?
Kind of bummed, actually. Yeah, I have no family get-together scheduled, but my wife and I are going to have a little Thanksgiving. But I'm actually going to introduce my European teammates to American Thanksgiving next month.
All right, well, good. Good. Caitlin, you're in Frankfurt, yes?
Yep.
What's it like there? Are you doing the big thing?
Well, I'm not doing it, but another reporter is. So I'm going to go over to a reporter from the Wall Street Journal. She's having a bunch of American expats and some curious Germans over for Thanksgiving dinner.
That's the best way to do it, is have somebody else do it. Now, is there in Germany this Black Friday thing where you go out? I mean, obviously, it's not Black Friday for them because they don't have Thanksgiving. But do they go out and get going on Thanksgiving shopping early like we do?
So short answer is no, but
okay, slightly longer answer.
But the slightly longer answer is this is about a week away from the start to the Christmas market season. And so that's sort of what Thanksgiving means to me here, is that I know in about a week you're going to have all of the different Christmas market stalls open. There'll be Glühwein for sale, ornaments. So that's really when the holiday shopping gets started.
Yeah, I bet. Matt, up there in Edinburgh, is there talk of the European financial crisis and doom and gloom, or have you guys sort of skipped that and you're not paying attention?
Well, it just depends on the day. I mean, I'm sure most of your listeners are aware there's a little bit of an independence debate going on, just a little bit. So pretty much any news story has something to do with the independence vote. I mean, anything, any tie they can put in there to independence, they'll put it in there. But it's the British mentality, as I'm learning. It's this, you know, keep going, moving forward effort that they like to do. And that's been their mentality since the end of World War II.
Yeah. Caitlin, down in Germany, is there a lot of talk still about the financial crisis, or has that sort of gone into like holiday hiatus?
Yes, there is a lot of talk about it in the news cycle, but I would say just among friends and, you know, people that I run into in the street, it's a little bit, I think people kind of have hit their euro crisis threshold, and they're not really talking about it day to day. I think a lot of people still are taking vacations and being cautious, but that's more about the German character than I think a real worry about the economy.
This is great. This is like two stories of independent European character here with the Scots and the Germans.
Definitely.
This is a completely random thing, but it's because I just went to Starbucks. Have the Starbucks over there switched over to the Christmas cups yet? I mean, is that whole thing inundated you guys yet, Matt?
Oh, yeah, definitely. This year, actually, I followed Starbucks on Twitter, and it was quite funny because they were talking about new drinks coming up, and there was the pumpkin spice latte, and I'm like, oh, this is... I've had this for so many years, but yeah, the queues are big here. Yeah, definitely.
I think I'm horrified to find out that we've introduced pumpkin spice lattes to the Scots. I'm just not proud of that. Hey, so Caitlin, when you go out and you shop, and when the Christmas markets eventually start up, are people spending or are they window shopping?
I would say people are spending. I was actually in Berlin yesterday doing a little early Christmas shopping, and there were a lot of shopping bags walking out of the stores. So it seemed like even though there weren't sales, people are comfortable spending money. I think there's a readiness for the holiday, and the stores are stocking up even though they're not actually putting things at discount yet.
Matt Smith, he's in Edinburgh, Scotland. Caitlin Carroll, once of Marketplace, now of Frankfurt, Germany. Thanks, you guys. We'll see you.
Thanks, Kai.
Thanks, Kai.
Coming up, information wants to be free, right? What about education?
Why would I go to an institution that has very little brand for $15,000 a year when I could go to a low-cost model and be taking the best of the best.
Why indeed? But first, let's do the numbers. Wall Street was closed today, but trading did go on around the rest of the world. In Europe, Germany's DAX gained 0.8%. The British FTSE added about 2/3%. The French CAC 40 rose 0.6%. A survey indicating the first expansion of Chinese manufacturing in more than a year was good news for oil and mining stocks. That Chinese factory survey was good for Canadian mining companies, too, as the Toronto Stock Exchange rose about 0.3%, a little bit more. Research in Motion surged on anticipation of the new BlackBerry in January. Yeah, believe that when you see it. Singapore stocks rose nearly 1%, led by banks, helped by optimism about the global slowdown. South Africa's Stock Exchange hit a record high as it added nearly 1%. Shares of the global brewer SABMiller jumped 6% today on news of strong first-half earnings. In Pakistan, the Karachi Exchange was flat. The dominant news there is sectarian attacks on Shiites yesterday, with more feared this weekend as a major religious holiday ends. You're listening to Marketplace.
Do you enjoy the music we play between stories? Visit the Marketplace music section to browse playlists for all of our programs and to buy those songs on Amazon. A percentage of each purchase goes towards supporting our programs. Find more online at marketplace.org/music.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at events coming up Friday. Ah, Black Friday, the official start of the holiday shopping season, the day when retailers are in the black with profits. On Wall Street, the stock markets will close early. Hey, even a floor trader could use a good deal on a TV. And on another note, on this day, back in 1889, the jukebox made its debut in San Francisco. I dance to that. I'm Bridget Bodner.
This is Marketplace from APM. I'm Kai Rizdahl. All right, you remember the drought that drove corn prices to record highs last summer? Okay, good. Now, what do you suppose turkeys mostly eat? Right. So, the American Farm Bureau Federation says the average cost of a 16-pound turkey has risen about 60 cents in the past year. Might not seem like a big bump for your family's holiday feast, but what about a family business that serves Thanksgiving dinner year-round? Shannon Mullen has that story.
Say you get a craving for a turkey dinner with all the trimmings in July. Hart's Turkey Farm in Meredith, New Hampshire has you covered.
364 days a year. We do take Christmas off.
Sim Willie is general manager of the restaurant. It's been in his family for three generations.
This is our service kitchen.
So back here, we're getting orders together for Thanksgiving. So we're stuffing our turkeys, tying them, and all that good stuff.
Hart started in 1954 as a working turkey farm with a 12-seat restaurant. Now its dining rooms hold 500 people and serve thousands of turkeys a year. Sim Willie buys them from a co-op of farmers in Utah, and he says he's paying 20% more for turkeys since last summer's drought decimated Midwestern corn crops.
It's hard. We haven't raised our prices here about 2 years. This year, I did have to raise my prices.
Directly because of the turkey cost increase?
Yeah.
These birds eat a lot of corn, 60% of their feed, according to the National Turkey Federation. Spokeswoman Peggy Albertson says on top of that, the EPA won't lower its renewable fuel quota for corn-based ethanol.
So there is less corn out there because of the drought, and what corn there is being mandated to be blended into the gasoline.
Albertson says that's left the country's corn stocks at an all-time low, and it's hard to predict how long they'll take to rebuild. At Hart's Turkey Farm, Sim Willie says the business is trying to absorb some of the extra cost, but he's had to cut back on some employees' hours. As for the restaurant's higher prices, Willie says either his customers don't mind or they haven't noticed.
Knock on wood, not a word.
In New Hampshire, I'm Shannon Mullen for Marketplace.
Retailers are, as you know, opening earlier than ever this year. Many tonight, in fact. Thanksgiving Day has become Black Friday. But as Frank Newport was telling us up at the top of the show, most of us don't actually shop tomorrow. So what's with the stores? Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer has that story.
Used to be opening at midnight on Thanksgiving was considered radical. Now it's rather quaint. This year, the big box stores are betting consumers are willing to trade drumsticks for Thanksgiving Day doorbusters. Clementine Ioannis is a retail strategist at Kurt Salmon.
And this year, you've got retailers like Sears, Target, Toys R Us, Walmart that are all opening, you know, around 8 or 9 p.m.
Ioannis says retailers like the free publicity they get by opening early on Thanksgiving. They hope that'll convince those of us who aren't shopping today to come in later. And this isn't expected to be a stellar holiday shopping season. So Ioannis says stores have to compete fiercely for all the sales they can get.
If your direct competitor is opening up early and you really want to get the sale, then, you know, that's one way to do it.
So who are these early shoppers anyway? I hit the streets of downtown Washington to find some. It didn't take long. The first person I talked to was 29-year-old Sparkle Kennedy. That is her real name, and she's living up to it, glowing with excitement about shopping tonight.
I'm going to Kmart first, and from there I'll probably go to the midnight sales at the mall, and then I'll probably go to Target's, Walmart. Then I'll go home and probably shop online a little too.
Kennedy is a retailer's dream. She's also the perfect demographic. In fact, she's another reason stores are opening on Thanksgiving. They're trying to attract the 20-something shopper who hates getting up early and wouldn't dream of lining up to get into stores at 5 a.m. on Black Friday. So will the Turkey Day shopping hours give retailers a big boost? Nicoletta Panteva is a senior retail analyst with Ibis World. She says Thanksgiving will just cannibalize sales from Black Friday and the weekend.
Sales are just going to shift a little bit earlier, but it's unlikely that it will boost the entire weekend sales overall.
In fact, Ibis World is predicting that Thanksgiving weekend sales will only be 2.8% higher than last year. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall Genzer for Marketplace.
Earlier this year, two of the biggest names in higher education announced they were going to let anybody in the world attend their classes for free by computer. Harvard and MIT did a whole new education website called edX. It's part of a rapidly grown movement among top schools to offer a lot of their courses online. Schools not in that top tier, though, may suffer for it. Stephen Smith of American Radio Works has the second report in our series, Keyboard College.
Last spring, Harvard and MIT announced a $60 million plan to make scores of their courses available for free online. The partnership is called edX, and it aims to reach a billion people around the world.
This is the year of disruption for education.
That's MIT computer scientist Anant Agarwal. He's the president of edX.
The time is right because the internet is available in large parts of the world. Computers and tablets have become relatively low cost, so people around the world customarily have one of these devices and have a connection over the internet. And things are moving extremely, extremely fast.
edX is part of a nationwide movement led by three big players. Udacity and Coursera are free education companies based in California. edX is in Cambridge, Massachusetts. The goal for all three of them is to make education available to people worldwide for free. But Anand Agarwal says that edX also has the mission to improve teaching, both online and face-to-face. He says computer technology can help tailor courses to how 21st century college students actually work and live.
You know, we are finding that most students watch videos between 12 and 2 o'clock at night. Okay, but we still make them come to lectures early in the morning. And so by making available online videos with interaction built into that, we can now make learning be available at any place, at any time, to anyone.
This is CS 50.
Computer Science 50, otherwise known as CS 50, is Harvard College's introduction to the intellectual enterprises of computer science and the art of programming for majors and non-majors alike.
This video introduces one of the initial courses online at edX. Harvard Provost Alan Garber explains that the edX software can record each student's tap of the keyboard and click of the mouse. That means education researchers will have a fine-grained view of how learners use online lectures, study guides, and quizzes.
One of the beautiful things about online education is that as we improve the tools for teaching and learning, we also learn more about how our students are using these tools. And this is a virtuous cycle here.
These massively open online courses, as they're called, may change the way students learn not only at Harvard, but also at schools across the United States. As states cut their budgets, many public colleges and universities are struggling to teach more students with less money. Schools are looking for ways to cut costs. Terry Moe is a political scientist at the Hoover Institution at Stanford. He says mid-tier colleges should tap into the free courseware from leading universities like Harvard to offer more and better classes to their local students.
Suppose you have some Pulitzer Prize-winning historian who's a fantastic lecturer on the Civil War. Why should they take pot luck, you know, and walk into some classroom and they get a professor who probably is not going to be nearly as good as this person? Okay, well, it's that kind of thing, but applied across the full range of subjects.
Mo says struggling schools could teach more classes and more students, but with fewer profs.
This is just a bigger bang for the buck way of providing kids with a quality education.
The free classes offered by big-name universities may have another unintended effect on higher education: cheaper degrees. Michael Horn is a higher ed expert at the Innosight Institute, a Silicon Valley think tank.
There's going to be the invention of lots of low-cost universities now that take these component parts from Coursera or from an edX and assemble it together in coherent degrees that'll cost $1,000, $2,000.
Horn says these low-cost online programs would be a grave danger to middle-tier colleges and universities in the United States, those schools that are not particularly well-known nor especially affordable.
Because why would I go to an institution that has very little brand for $15,000 a year when I could go to a low-cost model and be taking the best of the best from MIT, Dartmouth, Harvard, wherever? That, I think, is going to challenge things quite a bit in the years to come.
The elite universities experimenting with massive open courses do not expect the free online programs to cut demand for the traditional on-campus experience. Plenty of students will still want to live in dorms and to meet their professors in classrooms. But when the cost of college can run more than $60,000 a year at the most selective schools, a free virtual classroom may look pretty good. This is Stephen Smith for Marketplace.
We've got more about how education is changing with technology on our website. It's marketplace.org.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business.
This final note today, which is just one of those times in radio where it's best to just play the tape.
Where will that wedding breakfast be? Where will that wedding breakfast be?
That was, in fact, turkeys, 300 of them recorded in 1973. Seems there is actual science that shows turkeys can, in fact, be made to gobble on cue. The guy who did the recording, a reporter for KPFA, which is a public radio station up in Berkeley, California, said the trick was to do it without aggravating the birds. Did happen once, I guess. Nobody was hurt, though, so that's all right. All right, we're done. That's Marketplace from APM American Public Media on this Thanksgiving Day. U.S. markets were closed today. Of course, Wall Street will be open tomorrow, but they're going home early. John Buckley, Nancy Fargali, Stephen Gregory, John Haas, George Judson, Jonathan Karp, Betsy Streisand, and Celeste Wesson are the Marketplace editing staff. The acting managing editor is Ethan Lindsay. He's a new dad, by the way. I'm Kai Rizdal. We'll see you back here tomorrow. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.